Hi everyone, and welcome to Keyframe, the Geek Show's dedicated animation podcast. That's right, I said animation because we don't just do anime, we do all sorts of animation, from puppetry to stop motion to anime itself. Yes. My name's Rob, and joining me today is Tucky.
Yoo-hoo.
And that's it.
Again, by ourselves again.
Yes. Some people might start thinking we're an item, Tucky.
And we're one of them high-end items, though.
I don't know. I'm sure Donna would have serious words about that as well.
I told you, going out with him, man. Make yourselves ornaments. Out with a nightstand.
Yeah, we'll have matching sweaters and all sorts.
Oh, dear. Anyway, moving swiftly on, we usually go on about the Oscars and how they're very Western bias and that, and we'll get to do that round again as the Oscars for your consideration list has been released.
Yeah, I mean, this is the year when the Academy actually decided to make some big changes in, you know, on the back end of things. Didn't they kind of expand the number of people who are on or members of the Academy and also open the doors to not just the best film, but also the best popular film?
Yeah, it's a weird one because it's an Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences animated feature film. So, yeah.
Which is the one that we're interested in, obviously.
Yeah, it's the only one we're interested in because it's the only one where anime can actually... Well, we're animation, like you said, all forms of animation, but I'm in it for the anime, to be honest.
For the animation in general, because that's me.
Well, because last year, like we're saying, it was actually a fantastic year for anime movies.
Yeah.
Silent Voice and whatnot, and
they all got stiffed by the Academy.
Yeah, Disney whipped out their cocoa, and the Academy lapped it up.
And I've got to say, I've recently reviewed The Breadwinner, and I've got to say that should have won. I know I said a Silent Voice, and it was a close call. Right, it was a very, very close call for me originally until I watched The Breadwinner, because I always did want to watch it. Until I watched The Breadwinner, I said A Silent Voice should have won the Oscar because of relevancy, because of the message it was sending, because it was very, very anti-bullying, and bullying is a big thing. But The Breadwinner, I think, has taken the top spot for me because...
Well, it was also a double standard, though, because... there was a movie done by, I believe, was like ex-Hollyoaks actors.
Yeah.
About a deaf child, and it was along the similar vein of A Silent Voice. Obviously not beautifully animated because it's live action, but that one, and it was kind of like, the animation that was put out, like the anime especially, there was really powerful movies.
Hmm.
And the emotions were there, and like you say, they had actually like a serious message behind them. And we kind of feel like they've just opted for, oh, it's Disney, you know.
Well, it's not just Disney. It's from the West. The whole thing about The Breadwinner, and I'd love to see the ex-Hollyoaks actors try and do this. A family living in Afghanistan under the reign of the Taliban. The father fought against the Russians and lost his leg and is now a teacher. But then the Taliban take over and start banning things left, right and center, including the history of the world, saying that his father is, you know, their father has just made it up and he gets thrown into prison. So the girls, because the youngest child is the boy, and there's two girls who are older than that, and the middle child, the girl, ends up dressing as a boy, which can actually lead to her being stoned to death. She dresses as a boy to try and sell some items so she can raise some money to buy food for her family.
So, like you say, powerful, emotive stuff.
Yeah. And this
it's a lot more than some little kid that goes to the land of the dead because Disney's took you inside the mind, Disney's took you to foreign lands and whatever, and now they're taking you to the land of the dead. That's how they like advertised it. It's something that I don't know, it just seems like a cop out. And now we've got this year's list in front of us of the for your consideration. These aren't shortlisted. These are just ones that have went forward and says, you know, give us a chance. There are a lot more anime.
Well, it's not just a lot more anime. There's a lot more diversity in general this year, and I think what I'm hoping is that this isn't just a blip, that this trend continues, and that they'll basically focus on world animation rather than just Western or American animation. And I say Western because you have Aardman in there as well as the only kind of British entrant, regular entrant, I should say.
Yeah, well, we're trying to save money. There's a Brexit going on. And we're doing swimmingly.
Yeah. Like I said, hard Brexit still sounds like a tricky poo.
But it's one of those things, like you say, they favour more the Western animation. And the cynical side of us is looking at this list, and I'm seeing the likes of Hotel Transylvania 3 in there.
We'll get
Incredibles
to them.
2.
Yeah, we'll get to them, Bo. We'll get to them. Shall we go down the list in order?
Yeah, go on then.
Okay. Starting at the top, which is Anna E. Bruno, which, if I remember rightly, I think it might be a Latin American one or maybe an Italian one. I don't know. It's directed by Carlos Carrera, and it's an animated adventure about a young girl who seeks out her father to help her, to help save her mother, who is, I think, mentally, having mental health issues. And the trailer was a bit odd. There's all sorts of creepy monsters and stuff like that. And you got like a little goblin type thing. It made me think of Dobby from Harry Potter. I've got to be honest, kind of a kid version of Dobby. I just didn't like the actual art style. The animation wasn't too bad, but the art style, especially for the little girl, I hated that because it just reminded me of, those Bratz dolls?
Rats.
Yeah, it reminded me of those.
Oh, they're creepy. But it's, like you say, it's powerful subject matter from the description. Mental health and also a daughter's journey to, I don't know if the father's like long lost or if he's just estranged from the mother. They're in need and, he's probably the only one who can help.
I don't know. It doesn't.
So it'll be interesting to see how they play it out and,
yeah.
You know.
Sorry, it's Mexico. Yeah. It's from Mexico.
Well, there you go. So, and next up, we've got the Dr. Seuss, The Grinch, with Benedict Cumberbatch.
Oh, Emerson Cummerbund. That's his official name. I will have you know. We came
Derelict Camembert.
Derelict Camembert. I think that one. Emerson Cummerbund or Derelict Camembert.
But the thing is, with The Grinch, it's been, I've been alive for like 3 decades now, and I've seen The Grinch re-released more times than I've seen myself naked, I believe.
All I know is that for some reason, I've seen 3 different versions of The Grinch, and each one has been released for 1 decade that you've been alive.
The Jim Carrey one was especially tough. It's a weird thing because The Grinch, it's like it's been that recent. It's like when they started remaking The Incredible Hulk and re-bringing that out, and then the actor still changed for The Avengers, and it was like, oh, come on, man.
Yeah. I mean, the cast for The Grinch, you got, Derelict Camembert, and you got Rashida Jones, Pharrell Williams, Angela Lansbury. Yeah, I know. Nobody died. But yeah, The Grinch, I'm not a fan, I'll be honest. And I know why they released it. It's the Christmas movie, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a goofy Christmas movie. Not a goofy. I think there's a goofy Christmas movie. Goofy, yeah. So after that, you see Nick Park's early man.
With the goofy cave people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not goofy as a cave. It's got to get convoluted straight away.
Yeah, but Early Man I actually quite liked. It's not Aardman's best, I'll be honest. I think Aardman's best is Pirates in an Adventure with Scientists.
It's got the most British humour of all.
Well, I love it because you've got the strangely curvaceous pirate who's obviously a woman wearing a beard, which, to me, immediately harks back to Monty Python and, the Life of Brian.
Yeah.
when they do the story. Are there any
women
here?
Are there any women here?
No. And then there's, it's called Blood Island because it's in the shape of some blood. It's just, it's just the best.
It's British daftness. But early man, I believe it was like Neanderthal man gets challenged to a game of football against Bronze Age people. It's one of the most British things you can think. Oh, I disagree with you. Give you a game of football, the settler. All right then.
Yes.
But next up, it's Fireworks.
Yeah, which is our first anime entry into this list of 25. Fireworks was out in 2017 originally, and the full title is Fireworks, Should We See It From the Side or the Bottom? Now, I'm glad they've just called it Fireworks, because the full title, I think, is just shy of being classed as porn.
It's open to double entendre, definitely.
Yes.
I prefer Fireworks from the Bottom. Mrs.
Yeah. I mean, the full Japanese title is Uchiage Hanabi, Shitakara Miruka, Yokokara Miruka.
Well, immediately it's not going to get because yeah. The bloke who writes the cards can't be bothered with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, calling it just Fireworks is fine. It's set in the town of Moshimo, and it's, about somebody called Norimichi Shimada and his friends, Yusuke Miura and Junichi, and they harass their teacher, their former half galvanizing of the what? I don't understand this. Hang on. In the town of Moshibo, Norimichi Shimada and his friends Yusuke Miura and Junichi live while harassing their teacher and the former half galvanizing over the beauty of their classmate Nazuna Oikawa, who is poised to move to a new town with her family. That sentence does not make sense around the second third of it. You kind of lost me there.
As soon as they got a harassed teacher, it was like, eh?
Yeah. Harassing their teacher, fine. And the former half galvanizing over the beauty of their classmate. The former half galvanizing of what? Who wrote this? Wikipedia entry. You lied.
Who indeed?
Let's try this again, right?
Okay.
So take two on Fireworks. It's summer and Norimichi Shimada and his friends want to know if fireworks look round or flat from the side. They forge a plan to find the answer at Moshimo Festival's fireworks display. However, Norimichi finds himself conflicted when his classmate, Nazuna Oikawa, plans to run away from home and wants Norimichi to join her. When things go awry in their attempt to escape, the strange orb in Nazuna's possession gives them another chance at staying together.
All right, so it's more of a runaway, like,
yeah,
teen kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting thing, like, because I think the question of do they look good from the flat from the bottom of the side, thanks to drone footage in the middle of, like, a fireworks display on New Year's Eve, I believe it was, start using drones in them for some reason, and we know that they just look round.
Yeah.
From all sides.
Because that's how the explosion happens. It goes outwards from the centre. It's kind of common sense. But the thing that strikes me about fireworks is I reviewed a one-shot manga volume, or one-volume manga, a while ago on 4Panel called The God's Lie. And it involved two kids who were running away. But I've got to say, if that had been made into a movie, I would have preferred it to Fireworks, because Fireworks seems a little kind of, okay, mysterious orbs, stuff like that. Whereas The God's Lie was very dramatic, very kind of real, and very raw.
Well, sometimes you just need like a soft, like, slice of life kind of, you know, nothing much happens, but you're sitting there and you've watched.
Yeah.
I'd imagine it would be one of them relaxing kind of, sure, movies.
I don't think so. I think they'll try and go for the raw emotion, but when you've got a total mal score of 6.57, I believe it was, you know, that's not really holding out much hope for it to be really good. Mal might not be the best marker for quality, but it gives you a reasonable idea.
Yeah, well, it's a great for a guideline, but as we keep saying with people, you know, you want
make
to
your own mind
watch
up,
something,
yeah.
Watch it. Yeah.
Yeah, make your own mind up. Don't rely on the scores. It's just the scores are nothing more than a guideline, right? They just help you filter out some of the trash. They don't help you filter out all of it. And they don't always denote what's going to be to your tastes or what's going to be a good show for you.
Yeah, just ask most of the people who watched Venom recently.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Venom. He's going to get him.
it was funny, just for the comedy in it.
Oh, yeah. But we'll come to Venom in a bit, because there is one on the further down this list that I am going to talk quite effusively about. But anyway, next up is Have a Nice Day, which is actually a Chinese animated dark comedy directed by Liu Jian. And it's about a young taxi driver a young driver working for a gang called Zhao Zhang, who steals a bag from his boss which contains ¥1,000,000, which is approximately $150,000, and he wants to fund a trip to South Korea for his girlfriend to save her failed plastic surgery in Nanjing, right?
Is there any more noble cause?
Yeah, but the thing is, do you know what this reminded me straight away as soon as I read the premise for it? My first reaction was Dog Day Afternoon.
Yeah.
And so this got my attention. I don't think this will be a contender, but it's got my attention. It's one that's on my radar now as one that I will probably end up watching at some point.
Oh, definitely. Well, that's the thing, though. It's, you know, we say the two Western, will the Oscars be political with a whole Trump, like, getting on to China thing, or, you know, do you wonder if, like, politics and outside influences affect these kind of things?
They do. But they won't affect the next one, which is Hotel Transylvania 3, Summer Vacation.
Adam Sandler needs more money.
And
the only reason people go to watch is because the design of Dracula's daughter is hot. And yeah, that's the only reason. If you've been on any forum online, or any place that you shouldn't have been online, well, the amount of Mavis fan art is ridiculous.
I wouldn't know. I don't really follow Hotel Transylvania at all. In fact, let me put it this way. You know the first movie, right? The first Hotel Transylvania movie?
Yeah.
When did that come out?
I don't know. When was the last, not the last general election, but the general election before that?
2012, was it? 2012, yeah, 2012 it was. Do you know when I watched Hotel Transylvania, the first one? This is how into Hotel Transylvania I am. I'm such a fan. I watched Hotel Transylvania for the first time earlier this year.
Did you enjoy it?
No.
Well,
it had some funny moments.
I enjoyed it.
Thing is, it had some funny moments, and it did kind of have a point, you know, when they had all of the guys dressed as Dracula or Frankenstein and stuff like that. And it just, to be honest, it reminded me a little bit of Sonny Con at that point.
I'll take it as a compliment.
Just everybody in costume, you know what I mean.
It's one of them, if you ever watch Adam Sandler movies, especially like the Grown Ups one, where it's just him and his friends dealing with being older people who've had lives, but now they're living their life with kids now, but yeah, they're still trying to have fun. And it's just that in animated form.
Yep.
And Hotel Transylvania, it's been that bigger hit that, you know, why not milk it? And I mean, we've been next on the list, Incredibles 2, we've been over that at length.
You've got to say, given this list, Incredibles 2 is one of the contenders.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, the fact is, the thing is, the Disney ones instantly go up to they'll be shortlisted. If they leave any of the Disney ones off from here, I'd be very surprised.
I mean, the one that comes after that, though, again, we've talked about before, Isle of Dogs. Now, the reason why I'm saying automatically Isle of Dogs will be a contender is because it's Wes Anderson. Doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter what kind of level of actor you are in Hollywood, everybody wants to be in a Wes Anderson film.
It's just one of them things. You can't escape it. You can't escape Wes Anderson's pull.
This is true.
It's a bit more seedy, especially with stuff that goes on in Hollywood.
Yeah.
But, sorry, don't sue Wes Anderson. It's not liable.
Right. Okay. The next one is a bit confusing for me. It's another, well, I suppose it's kind of an anime entry. The Laws of the Universe, Part 1. Now, the Japanese title is Uchu no Ho Remehen, right? Which I thought was a standalone movie. I thought it was the beginning of that series, but no, it's not, because before then was The Laws of the Universe Part 0, which I want to be fair and honest, it scored 5.1 on MAL, called UFO Gakuen no Himitsu, and the synonym for it was Happy Science Movie.
Oh dear.
I had to throw that in there. Now, the plot for the first film, right, this is where it gets bizarre, right? The plot for the first film was Ray, Anna, Tyler, Halle, and Eske are five high school students who are suddenly wrapped up in a mysterious incident. An alien species called Grey abducts Halle's sister and embeds her with a special chip inside her brain. The five stand up to save Halle's sister and try to reveal the existence of aliens, but continue to be met with mysterious events. The high school student's story progresses into a shocking development. What truths hide on the dark side of the moon? What are the true intentions of the aliens that are infiltrating America, Russia, and China? What is the true crisis that is closing in on Earth? And what hope can we have towards the future? The truth is out there.
Oh, X-Files, get on that.
No. I added that last bit.
Oh, you got me hopes up. I thought somebody had the balls to use a copyrighted saying.
Yeah, but the thing is, by saying that all it needed was the truth is out there at the end, because that is just an X-Files episode, isn't it?
Yep.
In fact, that is not just any X-Files episode. That is Mulder's story from X-Files. Because what's he searching for? His sister. Why is he searching for her? Because she was kidnapped by aliens. Why does no one believe him? Because everyone thinks the aliens aren't real. But the government is covering it up, isn't it? And it's all little grey men.
And the truth is out there.
Yeah. Now, here's the synopsis for Part 1. University students Ray, Anna, Tyler, Halle, and Eske are enjoying college life and pursuing their dreams. But in reality...
Whoa, stop there now. That's a load of BS. Nobody enjoys college. Yeah,
hang on. But in reality, they have a secret mission to fight against invading reptilians from outer space. I thought they were called the Grey. Or Grey, anyway, not the Grey, because the Grey is obviously wolves. We've seen the Liam Neeson movie. One day, Ray travels back in time to 330 million years ago on Earth to find his missing friend Tyler, who has fallen into a trap set by the evil alien Dahar. During that time, Alpha, the god of the Earth, was planning to create a new civilization on Earth and invited Queen Zamza and her fellow reptilian from the planet Zeta to Earth. And this wants to win an Oscar? If this wins, it's official. The Oscar, the Academy have gone senile?
No, this kind of stuff, that's the exact... If you ever think of the Oscar like Academy and that, they'll be all stoned off their face.
Do you want to know what
this will make
this...
perfect sense?
No. Do you want to know what score this got on MAL?
I'll guess a 3.8.
You were close. 3.25.
I overestimated it. Jeez, I kind of want to watch it now.
And we saw the trailer for Part Laws of the Universe Part 1, and my God, if you get a chance to see the trailer, please. Leave us a comment. Let us know what you thought of just the trailer, right? Because I looked at it, I thought, my eyes are bleeding? I never thought my eyes would bleed from animation.
It is the cursed anime.
It's so bad. The thing is, like after Part 1, it seemed like they just gave up.
There's got to be a Part 2 and 3, probably.
Yeah. So next up is Liz and the Bluebird, which I've got to say looks more my metier. Liz and the Bluebird is, if I remember rightly, it's by the people who did Asylum Voice, isn't it? The same film studio.
Yeah, it's a similar animation style. You've got a feeling that there's going to be a lot of feels in this one.
Yeah,
as well.
I didn't like the line at the end of the trailer. where it said the truth will upset you or something like that. And I was like, yeah, really? No, I don't think so.
Break your heart.
Yeah, the truth will break your heart. No, my heart's perfectly fine. You know, if you have your heart broken.
I've got a theory that it's like one of them's going to be imaginary. Kind of like when Marnie was there kind of thing. Like, oh, it's all in me head.
See, the thing that I actually found interesting about this, right, is that Liz To'aoi Tori, right? Liz and the Bluebird, believe it or not, is a spin-off of Sound Euphonium.
Ah, there, we're interested now.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, that is what is going to get people in to watch it. Now, if you look at the art style, if you look at the animation style, it's very, very, it's very, very similar to A Silent Voice. And I actually think that it's a story about Nozomi Kasaki and Mizore Yorozuka from Sound Euphonium. And basically, it's graduation. From what I'm inferring from the trailer, it's graduation. And whoever is the senpai in that relationship, right, whoever is the older classmate, she's going to be moving on to a new adventure in different school, different town, whatever. And the one who's left behind is upset because she's been reliant on her friend for all this time. Does that make sense? So maybe there's a little bit of shoujo eye in there. I'm not sure. But it's an hour and 30 of high school feels.
Well, when you said Sound Euphonium there, it's instantly changed my opinion on it now.
Now you're more interested in watching it, aren't you?
Yeah, it's. I hope that actually the music score as well.
Yeah,
I hope it follows suit because there's some beautiful music in Sound Euphonium.
Well, I think that if you are going to watch this is one of those ones where I think if you're going to watch it, you probably need to have some kind of background knowledge of Sound Euphonium before you watch it, so you actually get certain references in the film. I think the film itself, it might do well and be a standalone thing that you don't need to watch Sound Euphonium in order to fully appreciate the film.
Yeah, but it'd be nice to have the context there just so you can actually, it gives the story some semblance, and especially if it's just like you say, a standalone movie kind of thing. You can't really fit enough like backstory explaining like some parts of the story in the time frame given.
Yeah. Next up is Lou Over the Wall, and I'm not going to go into that because we have spoken abundantly about Lou Over the Wall, and I'm also going to rule out Night is Short, Walk On Girl. Those two, I think, should be contenders. If it was me, I would actually put, in terms of animated feature film, I'd have to say that even though I love Lou Over the Wall, I think Night is Short for the technical side of things, I think Night is Short just pips Lou Over the Wall, even though Lou Over the Wall is, for me, the more entertaining film.
Yeah, plus the storytelling aspect of Night is Short is absolutely outstanding.
Yeah.
And the thing is, that's gained quite in the anime community in the UK, it's gained quite like cult following now.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people rooting for this film just to get on the like nominated list.
Yeah. Next up then is I so much want this film to win, right? I so much want this film to win. Because I want them to say the full name when they announce the winner.
Yes.
Because it's just known as MFKZ. But the full name, which is going to get bleeped, so you'll have to Google it, but the full name is...
Fantastic. You know, we never see much swearing on the Oscars, but imagine the outrage. Outrage. Best animation, swear words, what?
Yeah, I mean, the storyline, the idea for it is Angelino is just one of thousands of deadbeats living in Dark Meat City, which I think is a great name, but an otherwise unremarkable scooter accident caused by a beautiful, mysterious stranger is about to transform his life into a waking nightmare. He starts seeing monstrous forms prowling around all over the city, is Angelino losing his mind, or could an alien invasion really be happening this quietly? Now, that, to me, straight away, what movie is that? Oh, come on.
Is it District 9 or...?
No, Rowdy Roddy Piper, man.
Oh, no, you're going way too far back for me.
They Live. You know all those T-shirts where somebody that people wear these days where it says obey and consume and stuff like that?
Yeah.
That's all come from that movie, They Live, which was, I think it was James Cameron or John Carpenter, I can't remember. It's John Carpenter from, was it 1988? And it's one of the only film roles that Rowdy Roddy Piper actually had. And he has to wear these special sunglasses because using these sunglasses, he can see the aliens and kill the aliens who were invading planet Earth.
That's so 80s. Such an 80s thing.
But it has one of the best fight scenes I've seen in a film, which is Rowdy Roddy Piper and his friend, who's playing Nada, and his friend Frank, who's played by Keith David. And he's trying to get Keith David to wear these sunglasses so he can see the aliens, and Keith David's going, no, I don't want to wear them. So they end up in a fight in an alley, and it's like one of the most drawn-out, realistic fights I've seen in a movie, because by the end of it, the two of them are just gasping for breath and just trying to throw punches at each other.
I'm going to have to say it now.
You must. It's a great film. But, you know, MFKZ immediately screams, They Live to me. And I really want to watch it, partly for the title, and the other part is for the They Live connection. So, after that is Maquia, When the Promised Flower Blooms, which a lot of people, it was on a lot of people's radars.
Yeah, a lot of people went to see it at the cinema. I wasn't one of them, but
yeah.
I know a lot of friends did, and they've got nothing but positive reviews on it.
See, this one was on my radar because it was written and directed by Mario Kada. And obviously, Pierre Works did the work for it. And I'm a big fan of Pierre Works, when you get right down to it. Hello?
Oh, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. Sorry, you just went quiet. So that one is all about the Eof people? And it's, they're removed from the world of men, spending their days weaving... Hibiol, a special cloth which serves as a written chronicle of the passage of time. And they age much more slowly than men and have the capacity to live for hundreds of years. They're legendary to outsiders who have dubbed them the Clan of the Separated. And Maquia is a young Eof girl who serves as an assistant to the clan chief, Racine. This, to me, see, the thing about Maquia... there were elements of... You remember Haibane Renmi?
No.
You don't remember Haibane Renmi?
No.
The one where it's kind of purgatory. You have all the fledgling angels, who the people who've died, and now they've grown small wings, but they're in purgatory.
Are they trapped there, or...?
Basically, until they actually acknowledge what they did wrong in life and how they died, they're basically trapped there.
So it's like a room full of stubborn people?
No. It's like a small town. It's the show that everyone compared Angel Beats to, except it was out before Angel Beats, had more of a point than Angel Beats, had much better art style and animation than Angel Beats, had better characters than Angel Beats, and was much more fulfilling and satisfying to watch, for me anyway, than Angel Beats. That's not to say Angel Beats was a bad show.
Just wasn't as good as this one.
Yeah, it just, for me, wasn't as good as Haibane Renmi.
It sounds familiar now it's described, but...
I'm not saying that Maquia is like Haibane Renmi. I'm just saying that there were certain similarities.
Yeah, same elements as them. Yeah,
similar elements. Anyway, Mirai is the one that comes after that, which was the new one from Mamoru Hosoda.
Yeah, it's getting a big promotional push here. Obviously, Mirai's future.
Yeah, Mirai of the future. I like Mamoru Hosoda's work, and I reckon this one, because of the director, if any is going to make it in, I think this one probably will. If I'm being honest, Masaki Yuasa might not get a look in because Hosoda released a film. And I'm not saying that to denigrate Hosoda in any way, because I'm a big fan of his work as well. It's just a shame.
That's just the way life is. But he's similar works. I think we touched on it before. Like, he's got a big time travel and family theme.
Yeah, he does time travel.
Every one of his movies.
Yeah. So, after Mirai is on Happiness Road, since we're not including the 90s short. On Happiness Road is a Chinese film. I think it's pronounced Sing Fu La Shang, or Sing Fu Lu Shang, sorry.
Trailer makes it seem like it's a kind of coming of age story where it's a young girl growing up in China. She's given the story of, you know, you go through life on Happiness Road. It's the typical, you meet somebody, get married, have 2.4 children, and, you know, it's similar to Western.
See,
like, thing of you do that, you get a house, you get married, you get your kids, a dog, and that, and a white picket fence, and live happily ever after. But with this, it's she's discovering that might not be the case, as with most people who get told that anyway.
It's about the girl called Chi who earned her American dream after persevering with her studies in Taiwan. Following her grandmother's death, she returns to the family on Happiness Road, where she begins to feel nostalgic about her childhood and starts to contemplate the meaning of life and home. What is happiness, and will she find her own happiness? And it's directed by Sin Yin Sung. But for me, right, my first reaction when I saw the trailer was, this is Only Yesterday. You know the Ghibli film, Only Yesterday?
Yeah.
It's that, isn't it?
It is. Still worth a watch, though.
Still worth a watch. I'm sure it has its own merits. After that is Ralph Breaks the Internet. Because
which will probably win it, let's be honest. It's got all the Disney princesses in. It will probably win it because of that alone.
And it's about the internet, which is the in thing and has been for the last 25 years. Ruben Brandt, Collector. That one caught my attention as well because I love the idiosyncratic art style, the animation. It's from Hungary, believe it or not. And it's directed by Milorad Krstić. And it's about a psychotherapist who suffers violent nightmares inspired by legendary works of art. Four of his patients, who are expert thieves, offer to steal the works since he believes that once he owns them, then he basically can control his own nightmares. And
that's an interesting premise in itself.
Yeah, he becomes a wanted criminal known as the Collector, and that's why I want to watch it. It's got psychiatry, psychology, it's got art theft, it's got criminal masterminds. It's got an interesting art style, some good animation.
Good art theft as well, not just crap art theft.
Yeah, good art theft as well. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. After that is Sergeant Stubby, An American Hero, which, even though is based on a true story of a dog during the First World War, wasn't it? Or the Second? I think it was the Second.
Especially Marley and Me goes to the military.
Yeah.
It's Militia Marley.
See, I don't like these films where I reckon Sergeant Stubby is probably going to be it's probably going to be nominated for an Oscar, and you never know, it might actually win because of one thing. In the title it says An American Hero.
Yeah, it's the thing is, like, there's a lot of untold stories in war. I mean, this one's based in World War One, and I mean, I think they did one about it in a comedy a while back. So animals in war, they've all got interesting stories, but when you try to paint them as like patriots, as if they know what they're doing,
yeah,
you know, an animal is trained to a certain extent. They don't have like patriotic blood. They're not American heroes or British heroes or whatever country they're on. They're just animals.
The sad thing is, if you want to paint any animals as heroes, what about those animals that were subject of really strange experiments during the First and Second World War? They were subjected to quite horrible experiments in order to try and prove whether they could actually do things like deliver explosives to the enemy and stuff like that.
Yeah, and the ones that got tested on for nerve gas, like rat and nim kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That kind of... I think there's actually where they did testing on rats for research on DNA, there's actually a statue dedicated to the rats. I don't know where it is, though. But I know that they've made a statue to all the lab rats that were sacrificed.
I was going to say, please say it's in Hamelin. Please say it's in Hamelin. Please say it's in Hamelin.
No. I think it's in Brussels or something. But
I was so close.
It's interesting seeing. I mean, with Sergeant Stubby, yes, it's going to be a heartwarming tale of a dog who helps out, like, the military in World War One. Obviously, there's cooperation.
Yeah.
America just, like, turned up at the last second when everybody's got trench foot and is knackered anyway. You know, yeah. The body count was already pretty high, so, you know.
Yeah, just, forget like, about that, though. Forget about that. The next one...
something else to forget about.
The next one, seriously, all I can say is Elton, please, your obsession with gnomes, you need to seek help. You need to stop making animated movies and just seek help.
Stop giving Ricky Gervais work.
Yes. After that is Smallfoot. Have you noticed I haven't even mentioned what the Elton John one was? If you want to know, Google it. I'm not even saying its name. Next up is Smallfoot.
Smallfoot. I've just seen this like about a week ago. I went to the cinema to see Smallfoot, and it is weird. Channing Tatum basically like earning some extra drug money.
See, I saw the trailer for Smallfoot, and my first reaction was, hang on, isn't this Hot and Here's a Who?
Kind of. It's one of them things like Yetis and humans have been battling for years. Yetis decided to go to the top of the like tallest mountain because humans can't survive there. And then like they've built this whole thing of like laws and that say instead of being like a mountain connected to a planet, it's a load of mammoths and whatnot. And it's a whole system of keeping themselves hidden in a lie. And for me, the weird part was LeBron James, the LeBron James, NBA superstar LeBron James, voicing a paranoid purple Yeti with curly hair. I could not get over that. So, because I'm sitting there listening, and it's like, oh, man, I'm paranoid. I'm like, who's that? Who's that? And it comes up at the end, LeBron James. And I'm like, my God. And that's all I remember from that movie. That's how unique and entertaining it was. It's LeBron James as a purple paranoid Yeti.
Wow. All right, shall we move on?
Yeah, we're nearly there. We're nearly at the end. Spider-Man, Into the Spider-Verse.
I've got a lot to say about this. Venom. I've got a lot to say about this. Number one, it has a much better theme tune than Eminem's Venom. The theme tune by Post Malone and Swae Lee called Sunflower is much better than Venom, He's Gonna Get Him by Eminem. Come on, Eminem, you're better than that. You can do better than that. Number two, it's Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, and it's about Miles Morales. It's about time we had Miles Morales on the big screen, even though Tom Holland is great as Peter Parker. And it's got not just Miles Morales, it's actually got Peter Parker. It's got Gwen Stacy as Spider-Gwen. It's got Spider-Ham, whose origin, believe it or not, Spider-Ham's origin is that he was a spider bitten by a radioactive pig.
Yeah, Peter Parker. In fact, you know, the thing is, if you watch these Ultimate Spider-Man cartoons, these characters are in it, and they do a whole Spider-Verse six-parter special.
Well, not just that.
All these characters. It's got Noir Spider-Man.
The thing is, it wasn't the first Spider-Verse, was it? It wasn't the first animated Spider-Verse, because that was back in, you remember the Fox Kids Spider-Man?
Oh, yeah.
That was the first one with Madame Web.
Yes, it's something that's had the potential. Like, say, there was Scarlet Spider, Noir Spider, Medieval Night Spider.
Oh, yeah, but the thing is, you mentioned Spider-Man Noir, who normally doesn't wear a hat, but for some reason in this film he's going to. But then you have the final iteration of Spider-Man, who is Penny Parker, who has a giant robot that is just kind of spider-ish.
Sounds like Wild Wild West.
She was adopted by Ben and May Parker, and her name is Penny. And what I love is that in the trailer, it shows you each of the characters is actually animated differently. And I don't think anybody's actually realised that.
Oh, no, they have. It's the different styles, because at the end of Venom, they did a post-credits thing with it. And you got like a full-on 5-minute preview.
Yeah. So, yeah, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which, I'll be honest, if I wanted anything to win that wasn't anime, it would be that.
Definitely deserving. If you've played the Spider-Man game, the new Spider-Man game that just came out.
Yeah.
I platinumed that, and my God, was it entertaining.
Yeah. The next one is Tall Tales. Now, this one is a bit of an odd duck, because if the trailer we've seen is correct, then it's kind of an Arabian Nights type thing, but with bees and stuff like that.
The Arabian Bees movie.
Yeah, the Arabian Bees movie. I'm not sure what to make of it.
It's kind of bee movie meets ant.
I think the full title is supposed to be Tall Tales from the Magical Garden of Andhoon Krings. I think that is supposed to be the full title. Mm-hmm. And it's basically a story about Apollo the Singing Cricket, who sets out to find his place in the world, and it's based on the best-selling book series in France, anyway. And one of the things that I noticed about this straight away while the trailer was playing was the evil wasp queen or whatever she is, and I thought, ooh, that's not going to go down well. Somebody's going to call racism on that.
As is the times these days.
Yeah.
As is the times.
And finally, well, I'm not going to mention Teen Titans Go to the Movies because we have talked about that recently as well. Yep. And finally is Tito and the Birds, which the art style reminds me a little bit of Loving Vincent.
Yeah, well, a little bit, but not as exquisite as Loving Vincent.
Yeah, it's a bit more rough around the edges. It is from France again, and it's directed by Gabriel Bitar and André Cattotto, and one other person whose name I will give you, and Gustavo Steinberg. So it's basically about a boy who's responsible, along with his father, for finding the cure for an illness that is contracted after the person takes a fright. So It's interesting. Interesting art style. And again, it's one that's ended up on my radar thanks to this Oscar shortlist.
See, it doesn't do much harm for anybody who's actually submitted them. And it's quite an extensive list. We'll probably see that cut down. I don't know how many nominations still have, like five.
Yeah, it'll be five, something like that. Yeah.
So, I mean, like I say, cynical me, you know, I'll say like about two or three of the Disney ones will get in there.
Yeah.
You know, very Western shortlist, I expect. But yeah, the hopeful side of me thinks that actually none of the Disney ones will get in.
Yeah.
Because I believe there are five in that list that surpass any of the, like, Disney entries. But
yeah,
like I say, I think the award is actually sponsored by Disney. So,
yeah. It's a good bet that Incredibles 2 and Ralph will be on there, which means three other places. One of them may go to Spider-Man in the Spider-Verse. The other one will probably go to, I've forgotten the name of it.
So put Early Man in there because...
Yeah, Early Man, yeah. That's it. I was trying to remember the name of Early Man because I've just closed the list. The final slot. I'll be honest, the final slot will probably go to Hotel Transylvania. Yeah, or well, Dr. Seuss.
Boss Baby can do it. You know, there's anyone.
I reckon Hotel Transylvania rather than The Grinch.
Or Isle of Dogs.
Oh, no. Isle of Dogs will be in there. Isle of Dogs will definitely be in there.
So it's a tough choice for whoever has to make that choice. But let's hope like they don't have the whole bias of just Western animation. Let's hope they actually sit and watch. And rather, because I get the feeling that they don't watch these movies fully.
No, they don't. Anyway, shall we move on? Because we've got stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
So, me first, and this I think is coming out soon, or it's already out. In Another World with My Smartphone is something that I've talked about extensively and hated extensively when it came out originally or when it first aired. It's adapted from the Japanese light novel series, which is written by Patora Fuyuhara and illustrated by Eiji Usatsuka. If I remember rightly, there is a manga adaptation by Soto, and it's about 15-year-old Toya Mochizuki, who is accidentally killed by God, and as an apology, God allows him to be resurrected, and he can take his smartphone, which now turns into some kind of super tool of all things. And it's the typical isekai, otherworld, harem, fantasy adventure with fan service and things like that. I originally said this is basically like Death March Light, until they did the anime adaptation of Death March, and I wanted to punch people because I had a soft spot for Death March, but then they decided to do the anime adaptation based on the light novel rather than the web novel, and I think the light novel is the worst version.
Yeah, you win some, you lose some.
Yeah, I know. But anyway, In Another World with My Smartphone, I've said before, it's not really my cup of tea, but it did have some saving graces. The characters weren't that annoying or anything like that. They were just annoying enough to make you grit your teeth, but not annoying enough to make you want to punch people, right? So it's been released, and you have an English dub now. They've done a decent job with the release, but I've got to say I am a bit concerned about the English dub. Josh Grell plays the lead role, plays Toya, plays the role of Toya, and his voice just doesn't fit.
So Josh Grell, he is Deku, isn't he, in My Hero?
Yeah, and this is the thing. When you look at a picture of Josh Grell...
Got his finger now. I think Josh Grell was Yuri on Ice.
Was he in Yuri on Ice?
Ah, to Google.
Yes, he was. He played Yuri.
Yeah, Yuri. Yeah, that's why, because Josh Grell, it's Justin Briner who's Deku. God, I'm supposed to know these people.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. You know them better than I do. But anyway, he plays Yuri, and he actually did quite well as Yuri. But for some reason, it just doesn't seem to work when he's trying to play Toya. It's as though his heart wasn't in it, and I kind of understand, because if I was asked to play the role of Toya, I don't think my heart would be in it either. Some of the other characters, Elsie Silueska is played by Leah Clark. Lindsay Silueska is played by Jill Harris. Yai Kokonoya is played by Michelle, is it Rojas or Rojas? I can't remember.
Rojas.
There's a decent cast here.
Very varied cast as well.
A very varied cast, but it just seems like everybody took one look at the script and thought, oh, this one?
Do we put that down to bad script writing, or is it that, you know, they've been doing a lot of simul dubs? Actually, that's something we haven't touched on, because Funimation and Crunchyroll have split.
Yeah, I know. But we can talk more about that next week.
Yeah, we can do.
Maybe it's the simul dubs. Maybe it's just the pressure from having to do so many shows. Maybe they're just sick of these otherworld harem romantic comedy fantasy things. And to be honest, if I was them, I'd be sick of them as well.
Got years more to come.
Yeah, I know, but the thing is, at least there seems to be a turning point now. They seem to be getting darker and darker, and they seem to be removing the otherworld element. If you look at shows like Goblin Slayer.
Oh, yeah, Goblin Slayer's set a standard there. That first episode where they've actually like, oh, we've got to put a warning on it now because it was that brutal.
Yeah.
Yes. Exactly. I love how dark me.
Yeah, but the thing is, Goblin Slayer is pure fantasy. It's pure dark fantasy. It's not trying to be an isekai series or anything like that. It's just pure dark fantasy. And that is where I think they need to be focused on, because there are a lot of stories that can tell. And the thing is, you can have dark fantasy where it's an isekai story. It doesn't have to be a harem romantic comedy all of the time.
Well, ReZero had... What they'll give money to.
Yeah, but I mean, you look at ReZero... It was a typical isekai up until his first death. And then in order for him to try and figure out how things are going to progress, he has to keep dying. That's kind of brutal.
Yep. And he fails every single death.
Yeah. But this is the thing. In another world with my smartphone is basically, it's otaku bait. It's that's what it is. It's otaku bait. Okay, maybe it's lighthearted otaku bait. Maybe it's nowhere near as aggressive as some of the other otaku bait I could mention. But it's still otaku bait. And because of that, it's one that, if you're a diehard fan of the isekai, of the Transported to Another World or Resurrection genre, then, you know, watch it by all means. If this is your type of story, great. Go for it. It's just, it's not for me.
I sort of say you won't like it, but give it a watch and judge for yourself.
Exactly. Anyway, Tucky.
Yeah, I've been busy. It's Twin Star Exorcist, which was about 50 or so episodes.
Yeah. Go on. You got 5 minutes to condense 50 episodes. And go.
Right, so this is a series which follows the stories of two high school kids. Who happened to be overpowered exorcists. Their story follows their journey as a prophecy was made that both would be thrown together by fate, and they're foretold to come together and give birth to the ultimate exorcist, which will finally bring an end to the war between demons and humanities and save us from Armageddon.
Hang on. They're two exorcists who are overpowered exorcists.
Yeah. Well, they're kind of like the best exorcists, like the young up and comers.
Okay, are they related? Because it says the word twin.
No, well, that's the thing. It's the way they do it is the head priest or the head of the exorcist society or whatever he sees a vision in the flames. He's one of them, you know, where it's like the leader, he's like overpowered himself, but he's kind of a bit nutty, like for comedic effect, nutty. He got the prophecy and he kind of like draws them together and he's like, right, well, you're the twin star exorcists.
And you're making him sound a bit like Donald Trump.
This show was a weird one for me, and being that, like, you know, I've seen the show pushed quite a lot by Crunchyroll, and it's got that kind of background bland aesthetic, like, you know, the cookie cutter supernatural animes usually have. And after watching it all, it's like my gut feeling's like, well, yeah, that's exactly what this is. It's not to say that's a bad series, but like 80% of the highly recommended anime these days seems to be like the blend into the season's viewing as like a padding anime, you know, so you don't get bored waiting for the good stuff. You know, I think Twin Star could fall right into the padding category. You know, there's some positives to take from the series. One good thing for me was there was a different take on like the folklore with the exorcisms.
You said padding far too many times and my brain just went, so every season there's a ton of padding. There's a Paddington joke there.
Paddington Bear. But it's one of those things, like, I mean, watching now, like, people, they wait for the new JoJo episodes, they're waiting for the Goblin Slayer, reincarnated as a slime. Them are the main ones. And then you've always got these like animes around, like the Zombieland Saga one or the Bunny Girl one. You know, they're not special by any means, but you'll still watch them because there's nothing else to watch in between waiting for JoJo to come on.
Yep.
And it's Twin Star Exorcist for me falls right into that category. I can imagine there have been something much more entertaining, much more popular on at the time. And, you know, Twin Star was just there because, you know, what else are you going to watch? Your time off.
This is true.
So, like I say, back to the folklore. It can be a task because, I mean, I can pull up an example here. Like Blue Exorcist, you had the human world, and you had Gehenna, which is kind of like human world, hell, etc. With Twin Star, it's the human world and Magano. And actually, like, you know, Google searched what Magano was, and it means
hell.
Translated as the field of misfortune.
Basically hell.
Yeah. And because it's like a parallel earth where you can walk through a gate and all of a sudden say, you know, demons reside there. Not the Magano, which is also a Portuguese restaurant. Interesting factoid there. So whenever you watch it now, it's like, oh, so you wear Magano. It's like, yeah, what's up with the chicken and the Nando sauce and whatnot. But it's an overlapping dimension. I think it's good that they've got like that instead of going, oh, it's hell and earth, or it's Gehenna and earth. You know, it's hard to be a niche when things have already been done and you'll be remembered as, oh, well, you're just doing what Blue Exorcist done.
Yeah.
But that's a positive for it. Another positive is the side character development in it. Because despite, like, you know, early off it's a prophecy, you know, you're gonna spend 50 episodes watching these two bratty teenagers who are overpowered, you know. You've got to think, you know, you've got to have a good side cast. And from the beginning, like, the state, a few of them are like, oh, even though these are like the chosen Twin Star Exorcists, you know, I'm not going to stop training. I'm not going to stop getting more powerful just because these high schoolers are like foretold to be like our saviors. You know, who cares about them? I'm going to do my own thing. Whereas, you know, it'd be fun to see all the side characters go, right? You know, it's been foretold. I'm buggering off to the pub. Now what else I can do?
Yeah.
They actually keep it out, and, you know, even though they know they're in a supporting role, they're given a bit of development, and that was nice to see. Now the big annoying part for me is that these two kids are foretold to get married and have a kid, so why am I watching them battle? Because as exorcists, you know, the element of danger, it's gone whenever they're fighting a demon. They're clearly going to survive. It's the, you know, the Family Guy Star Wars thing. It's like, look, there's like 4 out of 5 of the main characters of the film here. You know, we're not going to die. That's basically every battle I watch them take. There's no way, you know, it's about as predictable as a Harlem Globetrotters game. You know, generals aren't going to win. It's just not going to happen. So it's not just the predictability of both of these kids, but they have some of the most annoying personalities in anime. Benio, who's the girl exorcist, she's a little self-centered, but she's a tsundere type, and she's got a really annoying familiar. Yeah, you know, one of them familiars like, stay away from my girl. You know, I'm protecting her. I'm a familiar. I'm a little fox girl. You're a cunt. I'll fight you. That kind
of
familiar.
You make it sound like Roger from American Dad.
It might as well be. It might as well be. Ah, the crocodiles. So she's got that kind of thing. I mean, she's not as strong as she thought, but you know, she doesn't use that as motivation to improve herself. Whenever she hits a wall, she just does exactly the same thing, and it's always down to Rokuro, who's like the lad, and he's basically like Shinji from Evangelion. You know, he's self-obsessed. He's an erotic stain who actually sucks the life out of any momentum the story picks up. You know, when he first meets her, he's like casually destroys a demon which overwhelmed her. You know, but he doesn't want to become an exorcist because his friends died in the past, and he's so cut up about it. And he has to be sulky and miserable. And you know, he's not going to be an exorcist, even though he's clearly the most overpowered exorcist there. He's not going to be it. And I'm just sitting there going, just getting the goddamn robot. That's how his character makes me feel. There's no mechs in it, but I'm sitting there saying, just get the goddamn robot so we can get to the end of this. And, you know, it puts out me suffering, just get in the f***ing mech. And it's annoying. It's annoying because you've got, you know, two main characters you could play it out as, you know, instead of giving them the prophecy of like, you know, you're foretold to, you know, do the horizontal monster mash and have a Ben, and that Ben will become like the number one, like, overpowered exorcist in the world. Let's have a bit of development with them. Let's have them go through some trials and tribulations instead of being, well, you know, they're going to get married anyway. It's foretold, you know.
Yeah, but nobody likes an arranged marriage. At the end of the day, let the feelings grow and develop. You never know. They might not actually be right for each other.
But even so, that's a thing. You'd think, oh, could they do this interesting? Could one of them just get killed? That's what I'm thinking through this. Make this interesting. Make this plot absolutely fantastic. Just kill one of them. Yeah, just like all of a sudden, just kill one of them. And that's it. And then just have the sheer panic and desperation of the whole exorcist society fall and crumble because these two chosen ones, you know, they're not going to have the Ben. She's going to have to, like, you know, either him off and freeze his sperm while he's like corpses lying there or something. Or, you know, something like sordid along them lines. I mean, they're not going to do that, obviously, because it's weird. It's weird that I'd actually think that one up right there. But it's one of those ones that it could have been so much better. Like I say, it's more of a padding anime. So you can watch it, but, you know, you'll not remember much of it, like, when it's done. And I mean, it's a decent enough anime if you can overlook like the shortcomings with the poor main protagonists and the knowledge that, you know, until they have sex, like every battle they're going to have, that they're going to survive. You know, it's just give it a try. It's not really a must have, but the animation's solid. The plot is passable. You know, there's a lot worse supernatural anime out there, but it's a solid watch. It's not spectacular. It's not amazing, but solid.
Awesome. Okay, so something delightful to end on then. And we mentioned this, you know, when we did the Oscar shortlist for last year, we actually mentioned this. And we watched a trailer for this, and you'll remember the trailer immediately caught my attention, and I really enjoyed the trailer. This is a French animated comedy anthology film directed by Benjamin Renner and Patrick Imbert. And it's adapted from Renner's own comic books, Le Grand Méchant, Renard, and Un Bébé, Un Livre. And it's called The Big Bad Fox and Other Tales. Now, the idea of it is quite brilliant. The whole film is told as a stage play, which is basically three players, which is where the anthology comes in. The three players are baby delivery, the big bad fox, and Saving Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
The art style is very kind of children's picture book. The film begins in a theatre where a group of animals who are from a farm, including a fox and a wolf, they're going to be staging these plays, and all the farm animals are going to take part in it. All the farm animals being like a bunch of chickens, a dog, and various other things like that. And also a group of dogs from the town. So baby delivery starts off in the farm, and you've got a pig. And see...
No, keep going. When you describe it, it actually sells it.
Yeah. See, you've got a pig who is played by Justin Edwards, and the pig is just called Pork, right? And Pork is basically a serious pig. He's got his sawn house and everything like that, and he takes things seriously. But his best friends, Duck and Bunny, Duck played by Bill Bailey, and Bunny played by Aid Edmondson, you know, Sold. Aid Edmondson? You remember the young ones and Bottom? That Aid Edmondson? Right?
Eddie Hitler is an apple.
They basically, they're not so bright. What happens is, a stork claims to have broken its wing and leaves a baby that must be delivered to Avignon in the hands of Pork and a Bunny and Duck. And the baby's name is Pauline, and the pig, the rabbit, and the duck now have to try and deliver the baby to Avignon. But along the way, they run into a tarsier from China who's trying to get back to China. The problem that Pork has, or the pig has, is that the rabbit and the duck think they're a lot smarter and more emotionally sensitive to things than the pig is. And in some ways they are, but in most ways they are absolutely not. The first play is basically, think the Three Stooges doing a baby delivery. Right, but or rather delivering a baby in the way that UPS delivers packages, right?
That's basically across the lawn.
Yeah, that's basically the first. I mean, the very first thing that the duck and the rabbit decide to do with the baby is to basically send it by airmail in the way that the stork would have flown it there, right? But they don't have a plane, so they basically create a makeshift catapult out of a tree.
Sounds safe enough.
And I'm going to leave it there. That basically gives you an idea of the kind of tone of this particular film. And it's a delightful, delightful film. I've got to say, let's get that right out of the way. It's delightful. The second one is The Big Bad Fox. And this is kind of the main story. The fox lives in the forest and has failed repeatedly to eat the chickens on the farm. One of the chickens in particular can protect herself in very violent ways against the fox. And so the fox, who is also kind of friends with the wolf says, I don't know what to do with you anymore. But then the fox says, I can't even beat up the little ones. And the wolf suddenly has the idea of kidnapping some of the little ones. So he gets the fox to steal the eggs instead. And then there's a brilliant scene of the fox just bored out with skull, sitting on these eggs, keeping them warm until they hatch. Because they're going to let the eggs hatch, fatten them up, and then eat them, right? Dastardly plan, I know. The problem is when the eggs hatch, and this is not, there's a documentary with this called The Making of the Big Bad Fox, where the you have the director and the scriptwriter and stuff like that, and they're talking to some of the kids who played roles in the film, and some of the kids as well. And the kids, you know, they're basically going on about all of the hoops that they jump through to make the film and stuff like that. And the kids, you can see, are just getting bored. One of them's playing with a cabbage. I know it's bizarre, but it just works. And it's a brilliant kind of parody documentary of the way that documentaries with these films usually are, you know, kind of boring and dry and stuff like that. But this is basically a kid's film, so throwing in a making of documentary, which is going to be boring and dry, would, you know, it's not the right way to go. So I like the way they've done it. But anyway, what they said was they didn't test this scientifically. They didn't actually look for scientific proof. Now, I know when ducks hatch, the idea is that the first thing they see is imprinted as their mum, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if that applies to chickens as well. I don't think it does. But in the case of this film, the first thing that the chicks see when they hatch is the fox, and one of them says, Mummy! And so the fox is now the chick's mummy, but still has the plan of eating the chicks. until the chicks grow on the fox, and the fox basically, the fox challenges the wolf to a fight in the middle of the second act. And it's a fake fight with the wolf going, ooh, ow, ow, that hurts. Oh no, you're angry now. I must leave. Oh, oh, that hurts. Basically to try and humor the kids and make them think that their mummy is the toughest of all. But the kids then get the wrong end of the stick and think that because their mum is a fox, she must be the big bad fox, even though she is actually a he. And so because she's their mummy, they must also be foxes. So now you have these three chicks roaming around the forest thinking that they're foxes and wanting to go and eat chickens. So it gets more and more bizarre as it goes along. And then the third one, Saving Christmas, is just, it's basically pork and bunny and duck all over again. But this time it's kind of maxed out to 11. They basically have to save Christmas by taking the place of Santa Claus. The problem is that the Santa Claus that Duck and Bunny think they've killed isn't a real Santa Claus. It was a plastic one. But and Pork has explained that to them repeatedly, but they don't want to listen because they've got it into their heads that they've killed Santa Claus, and so they must travel around the world delivering presents to all the kids to save Christmas. And their makeshift sleigh is basically a shopping trolley filled with trash that they've fished out of bins and pulled by Pork.
Ah, the Pennywell Santa.
You're laughing at my description of this, and that just goes to tell you how good a film this is.
It seems like all good humoured shenanigans.
I've got to say, I will never, ever, ever look at Bill Bailey in any other way except as a duck from now on, because he fits so well. I've got to say, Giles New, who plays the role of the fox, is amazing. Matthew Good as the wolf is brilliant. It's such a good film.
I'll definitely give it a shout if I can get my hands on it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, let's put it this way. Time Out said it's a storybook come to life. Daily Mirror said perfect for the little ones. It is. My 6-year-old niece adores this film.
Is it out on DVD or Blu-ray anywhere yet?
It's out on DVD and Blu-ray from the 26th of November.
That's The Fox and Three Tails.
The Big Bad Fox and Other Tails.
All right.
It's worth watching. It is that good. It's an absolute delight. And if you're stuck for something to watch over Christmas, you know, and you need something just to cheer you up, maybe your family's getting to you or something like that. Maybe you're by yourself at Christmas. Just watch this. It'll
got 100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah. It is that good.
Definitely got to give it a try. I'm not going to be sitting watching the Christmas movies as Christmas is like on the horizon.
Yeah.
Oh, I hear how depressed I sound when I see it.
The thing is, it's only had like 20 reviews. The audience score on Rotten Tomatoes is 93%. And it's a film that's very, very difficult to hate.
That one disgruntled person. Right,
that one disgruntled person who didn't like it. Well, didn't think it was as good as it actually is. The top reviewer on Rotten Tomatoes says, in divisive terms, Pig and his friends, who consist of maybe a dozen drawn lines apiece, provide much-needed laughter in the tradition of the great Warner Brothers cartoons. Very true.
Yeah, well, give it a shout. And
see, the thing is, this is by the creators of Ernest and Celestine, which I love. I love that film. And one of the things that I want to just point out before we leave, because we are coming to the end of the show, one of the things I just want to point out is that there's a lot of humour in this that kids might not understand, but you definitely will. The adults will. You'll totally get it. And that's one of the things that makes this film really, really good, is that it doesn't, you know, the humour is hidden away. The adult humour, or the humour that's more mature, not so much adult, it's not vulgar or anything like that. But these are kind of referential jokes in the way that you were telling me about Teen Titans Go to the movies.
Yeah.
But these are a lot more subtle. So you have, you know, these are a lot more subtle. They don't hit you over the head with the reference. They basically just allude to it. So you infer it if you're familiar with it. And if you don't, you'd be going, okay, you know, it's still an enjoyable film.
Mm.
It's basically, they do references with a lot more class. But then again, it is a French film. And on that note, we're at the end of the show.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you want to catch up with any of our shows, you can find them on our website or the podcast provider of your choice. And if you are listening through via podcast app, leave us a rating. It does help us with visibility. Also on our website, thegeekshow.co.uk, you'll find all the other stuff that we do. You'll also find our shop and our Patreon. So if you want to show your support, you can do so by clicking on the links, on the relevant links there. Next week, what are we doing next week?
Oh, I don't know. I've got, I'm wide open for anything.
No, I mean, you mentioned discussion to do next week.
Oh, the Crunchyroll Funimation divorce, who gets to keep the kids.
Yeah, next week we'll be talking about the Crunchyroll Funimation divorce and who gets to keep the kids, i.e. the streaming services. no, who gets to
Sabbath gets to keep the kids.
Yeah.
Who's going to say no to him?
Yeah, exactly. We'll be talking more about that and what that means for anime distribution. But until then, I've been Rob.
And I've been Tucky.
And we'll see you all later.
Toodle-pip.